I have so many hospital bills that I can't pay from going in on emergency room. I need health care.
We hear how the Affordable Care Act will affect residents of South LA. Good afternoon from the University of Southern California, and welcome to Annenberg Radio News for Tuesday, the first day of October, 2013. I'm Anna Yukar. Thousands of LA County workers' contracts expired at midnight. Earlier this morning, these workers rallied along Grand Avenue, closing down streets between 1st and 4th Avenues. They are hoping to reach a deal with county officials over wage increases. Sarah Zahedi reports.
About 2,000 LA County union members marched along Grand Avenue, urging county officials to offer higher wages that would match the rising cost of living. Here are union workers Margarita Gomez and Joseph Torres.
It's always a struggle, right? They always say that there's not enough money and that they have to make cuts.
Everything else is going up except our wages. It's not compatible with cost of living.
County Chief Executive Officer William Fujioka says he's prepared to offer a 6% wage increase over the next 3 years. Patient resource worker Miguel Cooper says money will be coming out of his check.
We're still far behind, not even offered to cover our health benefits, so naturality is a take back.
The deal proposed by the county does not include any increase in health benefits. Fujioka says that will be a separate negotiation. The union that represents county workers fears its members will end up paying more in health premium costs than the wage increase will cover. Still, Cooper says the issue goes beyond money.
It's not an issue of do they have the money. We know they have the money. It's just an issue of how they value us as employees. We're working families. We do the jobs that private industry doesn't want to do.
Fujioka is planning to meet with labor leaders later today and will discuss the potential deal to raise wages by 6%. If wages are increased, it would be the first time to happen in 5 years in LA County. Sarah Zahedi, Annenberg Radio News.
As you may know, the federal government has shut down. If it lasts a few days, the effects could be minimal. But Emmanuel Martinez explains what could happen if the shutdown is longer than a couple of days.
Today marks the beginning of a new year for Congress, a new year for budget spending. But Congress rung in the new year with a hiatus. In a normal year, the House and the Senate normally agree on how much money to spend, and the president signs off on that agreement.
In the absence of that happening, there's no money to be spent, so thus as a result the government is shut down.
That was Christian Gross, a professor of political science at the University of Southern California. This year's impasse has affected the federal government at many levels.
In general, most executive agencies and departments who are charged with implementing existing laws, right?
And on a smaller level?
The census website is no longer active, which is, you know, data on the American public that the government collects. The National Zoo is shut down.
The stoppage will affect about 800,000 federal government employees. And 17 years ago, the last time there was a government shutdown, Jan Zari was in elementary school. But today, he works in the court system, which isn't affected just yet.
Well, for now, the courts are still going to be open. We're going to be using contingency funding to stay open for another couple of weeks, 10 business days.
And after those 10 days are up?
Yeah, it's kind of a big question mark what happens after our contingency fund is out.
They're not going to be getting salary. They can probably live with that for a day or two, but if the government shutdown goes on for weeks, that could actually impact their bottom lines. They won't be able to pay mortgages. Rent.
Professor Gross says history may dictate how long this one will last.
Historically, there's been a number of shutdowns to the government. Typically, they're only a couple of days, but the one that this one most reminds me of is the last government shutdown, which was in 1995.
And that one lasted about 3 weeks. Emmanuel Martinez, Annenberg Radio News.
Today, the bodies of two men and two women were recovered in the private jet crash in Santa Monica. The jet was coming from Haley, Idaho, Sunday night when it slammed and exploded into two hangars after veering off the runway. A Santa Monica construction company, Morley Board Builders, released a statement today saying that its CEO and his son were on board the plane. Eric Garcetti has big ambitions for the Affordable Care Act in L.A.
We have to make sure that Los Angeles enrolls more people during this period than any other city. And the White House called me and they said, I want you to challenge other mayors around the country. And so I have.
Many people signing up for health care today in L.A. may live in the same neighborhood. Catherine Davis brings us this story from the city's most uninsured area.
South L.A. resident Patricia Burrell has a familiar story.
I am one of those people who fall in that middle, and I'm not 65, and I'm not eligible for Healthy Way L.A., and I'm not covered.
Burrell was laid off from her job in 2006. She's a few years shy of qualifying for Medicare, and she has high blood pressure, a chronic pre-existing condition.
I need health insurance. I mean, it's about time. And I have so many hospital bills that I can't pay from going in on emergency room. I don't know what to do with those, but I need health care.
Burrell is one of about 47 million Americans living without health insurance. That's about 18% of the country. In South Los Angeles, that rate is even higher.
35.5% of South LA was uninsured all or part of the year.
That's Sonia Vasquez, Policy Director of Healthcare Coverage at Community Health Councils. And you heard her correctly. Over 35% of adults in South LA don't have health insurance. That's higher than anywhere else in Los Angeles County. In addition to that, South LA has higher rates of several chronic health problems that could be manageable with good health care.
In South LA, you have higher incidences of high blood pressure, obesity, diabetes.
And the list goes on. Research from community health councils has determined life expectancy in South LA is a whole 8 years shorter than in West LA. So it's no wonder that when the nonprofit group Community Coalition South LA set up an event on Saturday to teach people about healthcare, at least 1,000 people showed up. Organizers of the event heard hundreds of stories like Patricia Burrell's.
Our tent was supposed to open up at 1 o'clock. We had a line at 12:30.
I said, well, what's your status? Do you have health insurance? And he says, you know what? Today is my birthday and I turned 26. And it's after today, I will no longer be able to go on my parents' insurance.
One individual came and she said that she hasn't been covered basically for her entire life, and she's a cancer patient.
While many were enthusiastic about healthcare, not everyone quite understood what Obamacare meant for them. Even Burrell was a little confused about all of her options.
She did talk to me about the plans. The silver is one that I'm going to be looking at very closely, and the premium should be one that I can afford. But I'm like, what can I afford on my little bit of money?
The expense of healthcare is a concern for many who haven't had to pay for it up till now, but that doesn't bother Burrell.
Yes, sir. I don't mind paying. I never was one of those people who minded paying. It's just that we don't have a plan for people.
Burrell and about 300,000 other people in South LA will become eligible for health care today. That's good news for them, but many South LA residents still won't receive health care. Nearly one out of every 10 people in Los Angeles is an undocumented immigrant. Many of them live in South LA. None will be eligible for government-run health benefits. So even with increased access, that means at least 900,000 people in Los Angeles will still be uninsured. Catherine Davis, Annenberg Radio News.
LAPD kicks off National Bullying Prevention Month at Hollywood Schoolhouse. Madeline Newells has the story.
According to the Los Angeles Fund for Public Education, 71% of students report bullying as an ongoing problem. The Los Angeles Police Department held a news conference earlier today to mark National Bullying Prevention Month. Deputy Chief Terry Hara spoke to a group of students at Hollywood Schoolhouse.
To stand up, if somebody is bothering someone or teasing someone or bullying somebody, to say stop. Stop, and it's not right.
Today's event is the first of many month-long activities sponsored by the LAPD to raise community awareness about bullying prevention. Madeline Uhls, Annenberg Radio News.
Temperatures in the LA area are expected to hold in the mid-70s tonight with cool breezes and mid-humidity. Tomorrow and Thursdays are going to have foggy mornings with highs in the mid-70s. later on Edinburgh Radio News, I speak to two young journalists bicycling from Paris to China. There are 62 different languages spoken in Mexico other than Spanish. There are many more in Central America, and a small group is now working with the LAPD to remind LA that these residents are here and need interpreters. Brianna Sachs fills us in.
A host of Spanish media channels crowded into a tiny, bare room in LA's Pico Union corridor today to learn about indigenous communities. This was not a history lesson. It was a reminder that Los Angeles needs to provide the most basic service to help these residents function: interpretation.
Under the California law, we are entitled to have interpreters that we can actually understand. My name is Janet. I work for the Centro Binacional del Desarrollo Indígena Oaxaqueño. I'm the Los Angeles director. This is a workshop that's going to start a dialogue and share information about indigenous communities. This particular one has been done for 8 years.
LA is home to about 50,000 indigenous people from Mexico and Central America. Many of them speak a language entirely different than Spanish, and these small workshops are a vital bridge between their two worlds.
We offer services of interpretation in all these different languages.
These workshops have been flying under the radar for over 20 years. But now that many of LA's neighborhoods are overflowing with these communities, LAPD decided to get involved.
My name is Al LeBron, I'm a lieutenant with LAPD. I came here as a young child to the United States at 6 years old, so I understand the difficulties in becoming comfortable in your environment. But if we can have resources to be able to get on the phone and be able to get somebody on a two-way call and be able to translate and explain to them why they were detained, why they're stopped, and if we get to that point, then we're much better off than where we are right now.
LeBrar says residents from these communities are expanding and migrating to new areas of the city.
You know, initially they were kind of in the Westlake area, but we're now learning where they're over in the Newton area of Los Angeles, South LA, parts of Los Angeles. You know, they're moving out, they're buying homes, and you know, with that, they take the culture, they take the different languages, and it's incumbent on us to support them and work with them.
The panel said that these communities stay segregated out of fear and language boundaries. And even though it's important to preserve their cultures, they should also be given the chance to live properly in their new one. Brianna Sachs, Annenberg Radio News.
The world is waiting for the answer of 12 jury members in the case of the Jackson family against concert promoter AEG. After closing arguments concluded last Thursday, the jury met again today. The surviving members of the Jackson family are seeking $290 million over the pop star's death. Special Order 7 was hailed as a lenient policy on undocumented immigrants when it was put in place last year. It helped unlicensed drivers avoid getting their cars impounded by police. But a recent court decision struck it down, and as Zhao Chen reports, immigrants and the LAPD are not happy about it.
Immigrant rights activists gathered today in Hollywood to show their disapproval of the recent court ruling. They hewed a huge banner that read, "Immigration Reform with a Path to Citizenship Now."
We convened this press conference basically to repudiate LA County Superior Court Judge Terry's Green inhumane decision to outlaw Special Order 7.
In August, an LA Superior Court judge ruled that Special Order 7 violates the state vehicle code. It used to be that if an unlicensed driver was stopped, their car could be impounded for 30 days and they would face large fines. Low-income and undocumented drivers said those rules discriminated against them. So under Special Order 7, police could be more lenient. Drivers were allowed to show proof of auto insurance, acceptable identification, and a clean record. LA Police Chief Charlie Beck is a major champion of the Special Order 7. He told the LA Times the court decision will undermine the authority of the police department. But it was the union that represents police officers that challenged the order in court. Oscar Hernandez is with Four Rights for Immigrants Coalition, which organized today's event.
It is estimated that in LA County there are upwards of 400,000 unlicensed, undocumented drivers. And that is why we are applauding today the decision by Governor Jerry Brown to sign into law a new piece of legislation that will extend the right to the undocumented community.
Clever Carbrill knows about the law by his personal experience.
My car was unjustly pulled over, the police impounded the car, I was sent to jail, and I am now facing deportation just because I...
LA City Attorney Mike Feuer says he will appeal the judge's ruling. And the activists at today's news conference said they will urge the state to pass legislation to approve driver's license for undocumented immigrants. Zhao Chen, Annenberg Radio News.
Two young journalists are on a mission to travel from Paris to China on bicycles in search of the perfect story. They have biked nearly 14,000 miles so far. We caught up with these brave souls, Chris Walker and Morgan Hartley, on a stop in China. They spoke to us by cell phone from the city of Kashgar near the border of Kyrgyzstan.
Thanks so much for the opportunity. This is really cool.
So what were your goals for this project?
We both wanted to be storytellers, but had no idea how to really craft a story, pitch it to editors, package it for readers, and make it relevant to people back home. And that's been half of what this journey has been about.
Did you guys have any specific type of story you guys were going after? What kind of stories did you look for?
We started out by writing more human interest stories. We have this thing we call underworlds, which are really small communities of people that are doing something very interesting. We've written about cross-dressers in New Delhi, India, or call center operators in Bangalore, or Muay Thai fighters in Thailand. And so we sort of focused on that, these sort of long-form, more human interest pieces that sort of shed light on larger issues.
So can you tell us about how the biking then is incorporated with the storytelling?
The biking allows us to find stories that we never would otherwise. It just takes us into the craziest, strange places that you couldn't even take a bus to. It's really a sort of steeped us in cultures that we would not have known. So where a bus would take you 6 hours to get across a country or a region of a country, it'll take us a week and a half, and we'll stay there and we'll talk with people in each different village, and they'll say, well, here's an issue, here's something that's bothering you, here's a big problem that we're facing. And from that, you know, we picked up a lot of different stories that we wouldn't have otherwise.
How many more miles do you get to come home?
We've got about 5,000 kilometers, so that's 3,200 miles.
So what's next for you guys?
Well, we've got 2 more months in China, so we're excited to explore the country and do a couple of stories here and sort of finish off this project, and then we're coming back home.
We've been talking with Chris Walker and Morgan Hartley, two journalists who are biking from Paris to Shanghai. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you, Ani.
To hear more about Walker and Hartley's adventures, you can find extended clips on our website, annenbergradio.org. Beyond the Drone dropped yesterday. It's the debut album from St. Rich, a New Jersey band featuring musicians who used to perform under the moniker Delicate Steve. Graham Clark and Andy Vasoyan went to their concert at the Echoplex, and they spoke to the frontmen for St. Rich and the new project.
This is Steve, Marion. What should I say? This is Steve from St. Rich.
This is Christian Peslak. We are at the Echoplex. We're about to play in half an hour.
It's in Los Angeles, California.
Saturday Night Live.
The band's called St. Rich. Sometimes songs just start when you don't even know they're going to start.
Coming back home to see your face, but I know I don't belong there.
The thing about this band is they're going about everything backwards. They just released their debut album yesterday, but they made it available online for free weeks ago. They started out as a solo project. Steve Marion was the frontman of Delicate Steve, and Christian played backup. Now they're on the road as a group act.
Well, I think the more interesting backwards thing that's happening is that nowadays, I feel like this might be a common thing. Like, Chris and I made a record together, in my room and we made all the songs, we played it, it sounds like a band. Then we got a record deal from it, we got a booking agent, we got a manager involved, then we got a tour put together, which is why we're here. And then we started to assemble a band to play the music. That could never happen maybe 30 years ago or whatever. I feel like that's how a lot of bands are starting, where it's like a recording project that turns into a band that becomes maybe greater than that.
Steve and Christian wrote these songs back in high school. That's when they first started playing, long before Delicate Steve was an inkling in anyone's mind.
How do you feel playing guitar in this band compared to Delicate Steve?
It's harder to find my voice live as opposed to either the live incarnation of Delicate Steve or the studio aspect of St. Rich, whereas I have one amp, one thing, but I'm not the main guy. I'm now just a building block. So it's harder playing less.
For me personally, the main thing, you know, I'm just singing now. Delicate Steven playing guitar, keyboard, kind of like a sideman role. When,
not important.
Shit. Yeah, just totally.
Backseat,
you know,
driver.
Right. And now I'm the driver. The voice that's up front, you know, musically and...
Eye candy.
Yeah, sex symbol.
For sure.
You know, stuff like that. Now people pay attention to me.
What's your favorite part about being in a band with me?
Using your toothpaste.
What's your least favorite part about being in a band with me?
Being forced to sleep next to you when you're snoring.
From Echo Park, I'm Graham Clark with Annenberg Radio News.
In our Sounds of LA series, a new running club at South LA's KIPP Academy of Opportunity is giving young girls a space to stay healthy and build self-confidence.
I want to see, like, how far can I go.
My name is Malaysia and I'm 10 years old.
My name is Khalees and I'm 9.
What I like about running is that it's energizing and it's really fun when you're with friends.
Everybody gets to meet each other and we get to have fun.
I joined Girls on the Run because we get to be exercised and plus we get to be with all our friends and run.
We can stay healthy too.
My name is Christina Lowry and I am one of the coaches for Girls on the Run. I was really hesitant about bringing this program to our school. I was, you know, kept thinking about the challenges of like, where are we going to run? What are we going to do? How are we going to make this work? It's going to be dark in the winter. But then ultimately, I just realized, like, I can't make excuses for that. We've got to make this work for the girls because they need it more than anybody else.
My name is Sarah and I'm 10. I like running because you could be active and healthy and feel good about yourself.
I have a wheezing problem, so whenever I start wheezing, I have to take a pump. Two puffs. I just stop for a second, take my pump, and start running again.
Unfortunately, a lot of our students have asthma just based on the neighborhood that they live in and some of the challenges that they face. It's a big problem in South LA, the air quality and the homes that they live in. But they show incredible grit, and a lot of them are bringing their inhalers, they're walking if they need to. Every single girl in this room is beautiful and wonderful just the way they are, and that's what this program is about. And running is going to be one of the ways that we express that beauty.
Girls on the Run is number one!
Woo! ARN's Brianna Sachs produced that piece. People lounging around at MacArthur Park today got an energetic treat. Up to Us, a national organization promoting sports, led a march around the neighborhood. Andy Vasoyan reports.
That's the sound of almost 120 coaches walking up Wilshire Boulevard in the bright afternoon sun. They're wearing matching red shirts and sunglasses, and they're walking at a pace that most people would call a jog. Though the thought of that many coaches might bring up awkward memories of gym class for some, the activists behind the event are working to change that.
The interaction between the coach and the player is the critical piece to that kid's positive or negative experience.
That's Adrian Moore, an administrator for Up to Us, a New York-based organization working to increase involvement in sports. Up to Us is promoting one of its sub-projects, Coach Across America. The program brought coaches from across the country to share stories, exchange ideas, and work to improve their skills. Ashley Miller is one of those visiting. She's a snowboarding teacher from Seattle. She's a bit pink from spending time in the sun. Her last 4 days have been busy with the program.
It's looking at how do we connect life skills and things that will make our kids successful for the rest of their lives to the sport that we're teaching them.
It might not seem like there are many life lessons to learn from snowboarding, but getting young kids to confront their fear has left Ashley with a lot of success stories.
She was afraid of heights, and by the end of the year, after you've gotten her on the top of a mountain, she's like flying down the hill and she's connecting turns, she's carving, she's helping other students learn.
Despite how much fun she has teaching snowboarding, Ashley takes her business very seriously. She's been working hard to communicate to students how being confident has a very real effect on their success. Andy Vasoyan, Annenberg Radio News.
Now we check in with Tiffany Taylor to see what's coming up on Annenberg TV News at 6 p.m. on Trojan Vision. Sorry, Alec, I meant you.
How you doing, Ani? That's okay. This is Alec Lesnick speaking. And the government is officially shut down. ATVN will look deeper into how this will affect the local economy. Covered California kicked off today. See what the mayor did to launch the new change in policy. And Breast Cancer Awareness Month began today. Hear what the Keck School is doing to promote a cure for the disease. Wow.
To tune in to for that one.
Thank you, Ani. Appreciate it. You have a good one.
We're on the airwaves, but did you know we're also on social media? Follow us on Twitter at Annenberg Radio or on Facebook. Keep clicking on our website, annenbergradio.org, for more news about South Los Angeles. We're celebrating here at Annenberg Radio News because it's World College Radio Day. Stations from 38 countries around the world are coming together to promote music, news, and free-form radio with the hardest working DJs on the air. That's it for this Tuesday. We had help today from ATVN, Martha Daniels, and Victor Figueroa. Graham Clark produces the arts and culture segment, and Denise Scarra is the newscast producer. Our executive producer is Catherine Davis. And for all of us here at Annenberg Radio News, I'm Ani Yukar.